3500. Call now.
This is Radio Bolivie, broadcast every Friday here at WNZK Radio, 690 AM. Hosted by syndicated columnist Ray Hanania and Layla Al-Husseini. Get information on show guests and topics by visiting RadioBolivie.com. We want to hear your views. Call in during the show by dialing 248-557-3300. And now, Radio Bolivie.
And good morning and welcome to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690 on the radio. It's Friday, December 21st, the end of the world. You know, I'm tired of all these end of the worlds that end up doing nothing. Another end of the world catastrophe that hasn't happened. Doesn't it get a little disappointing when they keep saying the world's going to end and nothing happens? It's kind of like the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. They keep talking about, hey, we're going to make peace. But the truth is, all we get are more crappy, racist, Jewish-only settlements in the occupied West Bank and more killings of Palestinian children by the Israeli military armed with automatic weapons. That's really sad. This past week, of course, last week, we saw the terrible tragedy of the killing of 20 children at a school in Newtown, Connecticut. And they talk about the Middle East being violent. You know, there were like, what, 61 mass murders since April 1999 with Columbine, the massacre of Columbine that took 13 people. There have been, I think, 61 mass murders involving automatic weapons in the United States. Many of them, the people are mentally ill, but even people that are not traditionally defined as being mentally ill, you have to assume are mentally ill when they go out and kill people. You could make the same argument that Osama bin Laden was mentally ill. He was mentally ill. Nobody goes out and kills 3,000 people for no reason unless they're mentally ill, or he thinks that killing 3,000 Americans is somehow going to change Middle East policy. It only changed it for the worst. Thanks, bin Laden. Anyway, the only good part about this day, December 21st, 2012, the end of the Mayan big calendar, is that Osama bin Laden is dead. So we say la vie, glad to see him gone, and all the other terrorists. But you can't just restrict terrorists to defining them as Arabs and Muslims. You got to define terrorism as people who use violence to achieve political goals. And that is a definition of Israel's government, their current government, the Netanyahu terrorist government of Benjamin Netanyahu. This guy is the definition of terrorism. Our number here at Radio Bolivie is 248-557-3300. We're going to have, we're waiting for one of our guests to call in. Sahar Aziz. She's with the Egyptian-American Rule of Law Association, and she's a blogger, and she's written some interesting, you know, perspectives on what's happening in Egypt, and I'm hoping we can get her on to help us understand exactly what is happening in Egypt and what is, you know, the issues that we should be focused on in trying to understand what's happening in Egypt, because Egypt is a democracy now. They've elected a president, and I think what it is that Arabs and Muslims need to understand that democracy isn't the kind of democracy they've been sold by the dictators, where a dictator runs for president and he gets 99% of the vote. In a democracy, a president or a winner is going to get 50% of the vote plus one vote. They're going to get a majority. And it's not even going to be a majority of the people in a country. That's what democracy is. I mean, you look at democracy in Chicago, for example. Let's just to use math so you understand what's going on. Let's say there are only 1,000 people who can vote who are 18 years of age or older in Chicago, and they can vote. Or let's say Detroit. There are 1,000 people who can vote. In Detroit, who are 18 years and older. Of those 1,000 people, only 40% of them have registered to vote. So now we're down to 400 people out of 1,000 actually took the time to actually go out and register to vote. Now, out of that 40% of those people who took the time to register to vote, and this is what democracy is all about, folks. This is the essence of democracy. Only 50% of those 40%, in other words, about 200 people out of those 400 people, actually take the time to vote. So now you have the basic problem, 1,000 people who are qualified to vote, only 400 of them actually register to vote, and of those people who register to vote, only 200 actually go out and vote. And if there are two candidates running, that means that those two candidates split 200 votes. So it comes down to 101 people actually voting to decide who's going to represent all those thousands of people. Now, who do you blame? Do you blame democracy? Or do you blame all the people who are lazy, who don't want to vote, who don't want to get involved? Now, I think the vote in Egypt is a little bit different. I think we got a much higher turnout that was far higher than 40%. You know, when we talk about democracy, we're talking about democracy in the United States. And democracy in the United States is corrupted by loopholes and privilege and the biased mainstream media that can't even get a story straight if it was handed to them on a platform. So those are the kind of problems that Arabs and Muslims need to understand when we talk about democracy. We need to understand that it is about people getting out there. And you want to know something? The results may not make you happy. You may actually be in the minority. Or if there are three candidates, you may be outside of the plurality. So if there are three candidates and you only have 200 people voting, you're talking about what? 66 people will actually take the vote? You know, so, you know, you get 70 votes, decides the whole future of 1,000 people. That's what democracy is. It's flawed. It's not the best. But I'll tell you what, it is far better than those dictators that we have. December 21st, 2012 is here. We're 7 hours into, or 8 hours in Detroit, into the last day of the world. And, of course, we've been let down again. Nothing's going to happen. All those survivalists that are out there. The end of the world sure would have ended all our problems in the Middle East and the Middle East conflict. It would have ended all our problems with dictators and all that. But unfortunately, as it always goes, all these stupid predictions never end up doing anything. This is Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania. I want to thank our advertisers and our sponsors, of course, because without them, how could I sit here on radio and rant every week the way I do? So we have to thank them all. Jake's Candy, Icon Computers, Ziad Brothers Importing, the law offices of attorney Stephen Lagana, and the law offices of one of my friends, someone that I admire, Jumana K. Ruse, the American Muslim Center. And we also want to thank our partners, like Radio Aramica at RadioAramica.com. You can listen online to this radio show, and you might be doing it right now by dialing on your cell phone, 712-432-8008. Although when you do that, I wonder, how do you call and tell me what you think? But still, you may be outside of the area, and you can always dial in at 712-432-8008 and listen online or on your cell. But you can always go to RadioBallady.com and listen online right off the website at RadioBallady.com. Our partners include MC Gold TV, Sabil Media at SabilMedia.com, and, of course, the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, which has a really nice front-page story about the UN welcoming the state of Palestine, Israel's ugly, vicious assault on Gaza, what lies ahead for Syria, and U.S.-made assassination drones. How the United States has kind of embraced one of Israel's policies of extrajudicial murder, using drones to kill people who have never been convicted of anything, only accused of doing stuff. So that's a corruption of our legal system. But hey, who cares, right? It's the end of the world. It's December 21st. The end of the world, everything goes out the window. Ethics, morality, law. Of course, I have a feeling that the end of the world isn't going to be much of an end here today. as all of the predictions of the end of the world have been. And also we want to thank Life for Relief and Development at lifeusa.org and the Dearborn Free Press. I am Ray Hanania. We're hoping that Sahar Aziz is going to be calling us. She did email me this week and said she was looking forward to it. And I sent her a reminder email. And I'm hoping that, you know, these are this is kind of a volunteer thing. And we really appreciate everybody, you know, joining in. She just wrote something this past Thanksgiving. It starts out by quoting the dictator Hosni Mubarak. Now, he was a benevolent dictator, you know, a dictator wrapped in, felt or, soft royal, cloth. He said, Egyptians are not ready for democracy. That almost sounds like something Richard J. Daley said, the late leader of Chicago and the Chicago Machine. Maybe some of the old great aldermen of Chicago's Levee District who said Chicago ain't ready for reform. Hosni Mubarak said Egyptians are not ready for democracy. And that's what was his response when the world called for him to step down as a dictator and open the country to democracy. Fortunately, he was then overthrown. And Egypt really, you know, they always turned to Tunisia as being the spark of the so-called Arab Spring, which is now kind of in a winter and a solstice where, of course, we're at the point of the end of the world, so it might not matter today on December 21st, 2012. But Egypt, really, when you look at it, Egypt is kind of like the heart of can democracy make it or not? And I was hoping that we would be able to get Sahar to call us and talk to us about that. But you can call in and talk to us about what you think. Can the Egyptians make it? Are we seeing democracy? Do you vote? You know, I was talking to, I do a lot of media consulting and political consulting. I have about 15 clients. And they're all in government except for one or two. But most of them are in government relations. And I talk to them. And a lot of these government officials are mayors and legislators and districts in Chicago who have large Arab and Muslim constituents. And the one thing they all say to me is that Arabs and Muslims don't vote. We say we vote. We like to talk about how we vote. We like to get up there and say, hey, we're voting. We're getting the vote out. We're registering people to vote. But the truth is, the reality is, maybe we're not doing as much as we say we're doing. You know, that's the Arab problem. We like to talk more than we do. We like to say that, wow, we're really getting out and voting and making a difference. But the truth is, when you talk to these elected officials, they're not seeing much of an Arab or Muslim vote. And I think that's a major problem. Now, Arabs and Muslims, we don't like to talk about our failures. We like to pretend like, you know, if you have a disabled child in your family, I remember when I was younger, now maybe it's changed a little bit, but I've still seen this a little bit. When you go to somebody's house, and if that family has a disabled child, they always put the child in the basement away from the guests. And it's like they're ashamed of something that is not perfect in their mind. And that's the way the Arab mentality is. About when we do things that are wrong. We want to pretend like they don't exist. And if they don't exist, we don't need to deal with it. We're not ashamed. We don't have to have a problem. So we pretend everything is going well. And pretending something is going well is like having cancer and not doing anything about it. You're going to die, you know, unless you get up and you go to the doctor and you get checked. If we as a community don't stand up and recognize our problems, we don't have to make judgments. If we don't vote, it's not to say that we're a bad community. It's to say that we don't vote, and we need to get out and vote. And I think that's a big problem. And I don't care what people say. I've been covering politics 36 years, and I'll tell you what, the worst community in terms of voter turnout are Arabs and Muslims. They're the worst, especially Arab Muslims. Now, non-Arab Muslims really vote at a much higher percentage than Arab Muslims. Pakistani Muslims, Southeast Asian Muslims, even African American Muslims who are converts to Islam vote at a higher percentage than Arab Muslims, and they vote at a much higher percentage as Arabs overall. So I'd love to hear your thoughts if you want to call in here at 15 minutes after the hour on the Day of Destruction, December 21st, 2012, the end of the world according to the Mayans, another civilization that couldn't get it right, obviously, because the world is still ticking, still bright out there. I just looked outside. It's snowing out by us, and I think that's here in Chicago. And I'm assuming you're getting a lot of chilly weather up there, too, and all the problems that go with the snow. 248-557-3300 is our number. Give us a buzz, we'd like to hear what you think about Egyptian democracy, and maybe expand it a little bit to talk about democracy as a whole. Do we really vote? Do we have a problem? What is our problem with voting? Is it because we believe that we're just going to waste our time? It's like voting for a third candidate. I love Ralph Nader. I think he's a good guy, but I didn't want to vote for him. I didn't want to waste my vote. And to me, it's a wasted vote if you don't pick the better of three evils who are two evils who are likely to win. I'd rather vote for a candidate who's not as bad as the worst guy, but who has a shot at winning. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, excuse me, it's that cold here. We're going to take a break. Excuse me again. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation at Radio Bellity, 248-557-3300. We'll be back right after these messages.
The American Muslim Center works for community, establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313-565-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org.
Whether it's Makluba, Warak Dawali, Tabbouleh, Hummus, Mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
Jake's Candy, two for $1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
And welcome back to Radio Bellity. I'm Ray Hanania here. 248-557-3300 is our phone number. We're talking about democracy and the problems with democracy. And, of course, I could use your calls because I am really sick this morning. I have a little bit of a cold, and not the Mayan calendar cold. I'm not afraid of the end of the world because all these end of the world things. You know, it's entertaining to turn on the TV set and watch those survivalist programs, these people that, you know, they go up into the mountains, they buy land and property, and then they build a little home, and they fill it with food that's, processed and packaged, you know, and put in cans, and you know, it can last like 20 years, and they got all this water. And you wonder, what is wrong with those people? I didn't want the Arabs to be like that. You know, when I was growing up, people would always point to Arabs and say, what is wrong with those people? You know, that because Americans didn't understand us. So when I was growing up in the United States, I also had this sense that, you know, what is it about us? Why don't we help Americans understand who we really are? How come they don't understand us? You know, Americans are the most educated people in the world. They are the nicest people. They're just simple-minded, you know, easily manipulated and brainwashed by the Israeli propaganda machine. But aside from that, they're nice people. And if you can get them alone and talk to them for a few minutes, they'll understand. They'll always say, yeah, you know, those Israelis, you know, those Zionists, you know, they abuse and they've killed innocent people. But they won't say that in public. And part of it is that we haven't offered them cover. I remember talking to a member of Congress once from Virginia. And he told me how disappointed he was that he did so much for the Arab and Muslim community, but nobody came to his side. When it came time to elections, Arabs and Muslims just didn't vote. And again, I'm not talking about all Muslims, because the majority of Muslims do vote, and they're very active. It's just that the Arab Muslims, you know, the Arab Muslims and the Arab Christians, you know, so when I talk about the Muslim community, I'm really talking about the Arab Muslim community. And when I talk about Arabs, I'm really talking about secular, non-religious Arabs, and then the Arab Christians. So if I just say Arab, it's almost like I'm leaving a segment out of the discussion, and I don't want to do that, because I want to bring everybody in there. 248-557-3300, give us a buzz, let us know what you think. It was always kind of like, you know, why are we the way we are? Growing up, it was tough. It was not easy. It was much tougher, you know, in the 1960s and 1970s growing up as an Arab in America than it is today. And it's still pretty tough. So you can imagine if it's tough today, that it was how tough it was, you know, when I was a kid. Nobody wanted to admit they were Arabs. A lot of Arabs, you know, went around telling everybody they were Hispanic or Italian. They didn't want to say that they were Arab. And even the Arabs, you know, we'd always say, well, we're not really Arab, we're Christian, or we're Muslim. We kind of embraced our religion to get away with being Arab. But I'm not ashamed to be Arab. I like being Arab, and I'm proud of it, regardless of all our faults and all the problems that we have. And I have a little cold. So what am I going to do? What can I do? What can I do? It's like that guy in the movie Casino. What can I do? Anyway, 248-557-3300 is our number, and I don't mind doing all the talking. Even with a cold, I'm going to talk, okay? You can't shut me up. Can't shut my yapper, because I have a lot of opinions. That's one thing about being Arab in this country. You really learn to have opinions, because we don't get our opinions expressed in the mainstream media. I don't pick up the paper and say, wow, I agree with this opinion, this columnist. Wow, you know, I never find a columnist who represents my viewpoints, you know, the Arab view. Because the media has, you know, kept us out. They've really locked us out of the media, and we've done nothing about it. We don't do anything. I'm just surprised with so many Arabs living in Detroit, why there's no daily columnist with the Detroit Free Press or the Detroit News who's Arab. Well, why can anybody explain that out there in Detroit land? How come you don't have like a Mike Royko? An Abdullah Royko writing for one of the local papers in Detroit. Why is that? Why is it that there's no Arab voice? You got a couple newspapers that are bullies, you know, in Detroit, the Arab, you know, American newspapers. You know, one of them especially, just a bully platform. They're not even really news. It's a weekly propaganda paper that bullies and beats up on people. You know, and is that what democracy means to us and journalism as Arabs? that when we get freedom, we use it to beat up on our own people? I don't get it. And we sit back and tolerate it. We just accept it. And it's a little surprising to me. But why don't you have Arab columnists in Detroit? Do you think it's not important? Maybe that's what it is. Maybe as an Arab living in Detroit, you don't think it's important to have an Arab columnist. That you don't feel, you know, maybe that's what it is, right? That maybe you don't feel that having an Arab columnist in the Detroit Free Press or the Detroit News is significant. How come? I don't understand it. One of the first things I did, I was going to be a doctor. Kind of, I wish I had been, but you know, I take care of the cold this morning. And instead of being a doctor, I realized that, no, I could do more for my community if I got into journalism. What I didn't realize was that people in my own community wouldn't even understand how important journalism is, so that they wouldn't cover my back. You know, they wouldn't support me or give me, you know, any, you know, encouragement, because I would write columns, you know, in the Chicago Sun-Times and in local papers. And I never, my editors would say, you write all this pro-Arab propaganda, that's what they would call it. And no Arabs ever write letters to the editors thanking me. They never, but they'd get like 20 letters that hate me. Now the only change is, you know, we get Arabs attacking Arabs. So you get Arabs that write letters today, you know, attacking me and others, because they don't like what we say. So it's easier to take it out on your own people than it is to do something about it. But when I was writing for the Sun-Times, I remember I did a four-part series on the first Palestinian Intifada. It was nominated by the Chicago Sun-Times for a Pulitzer Prize. Now, it wasn't a finalist or anything, and obviously I didn't win the Pulitzer Prize, but it was nominated, and it was a Jewish editor that liked it and submitted it. And it was a series of four columns, full pages, in the Chicago Sun-Times that detailed the problems that Palestinians were facing, you know, at the hands of the Israeli brutal occupation. And it was the first time there was a series like that. I think it was in 1990. And no paper had published anything like that before. And there were like 300 letters that week. The Sun-Times ran those four stories that I wrote about the Palestinian Intifada. I mean, it talked about, you know, all the suffering that the Palestinians were going through, and how the Palestinians wanted peace, and how it really was the Israelis who were standing up to peace. And it filled up a full page with a graphic image of and pictures of Palestinians. I'd gone to Ramallah and Bethlehem, and I spent 2 weeks there during the first Intifada. And when I came back, I wrote the stories. They ran those, and I think it might have been in 1990, 1991, they're part of my book that I published called I'm Glad I Look Like a Terrorist, Growing Up Arab in America, which has sold over 15,000 copies. So you can read them in there. But the newspaper editor called me in that week after they ran the fourth story. And he said he was amazed. In Chicago, where there are 450,000, you think, literate Arabs, he said they didn't get one letter to the editor that entire week from anybody who defended the Arab position. He was really, like, shocked. Because, you know, the Sun-Times, back when I was a reporter there, was a much better paper than the garbage that it is today. It's really a pro-Israeli, you know, you couldn't even wrap a fish in it. I wouldn't even wrap a gefilte fish in it. It's so bad. But the editor sat there, you know, this is like over 20 years ago, and he said, I can't believe it. We didn't get one letter from an Arab in Chicago saying how much they appreciated or liked the stories. And of course, I know that people liked it, but nobody wrote about it. But they did get 300 letters. 300. Mostly from the Jewish community attacking me, saying that I was a terrorist. 300 plus. It might have been like 322 letters attacking me, saying that why did they allow this terrorist-loving Ray Hanania to write a column on four pages, you know, full pages in the Chicago Sun-Times, defending the rights of Palestinians. Not one Arab would write a letter saying it was a good thing. It was really kind of tragic when you think about it. I remember I wrote a piece for Newsweek magazine criticizing the way the Hollywood media would distort the truth and the reality of Arabs, you know, that we were the only terrorists. And I wrote that column, and again, they got, now Newsweek was a much national, it's a bigger publication, national. They got something like 800 to 900 letters in response to the column I wrote. And they did get two Arabs who wrote. And the two Arabs who wrote were upset because they didn't want me to put a spotlight on the stereotype of Arabs being terrorists. So even though I was defending Arabs, they felt, oh, don't talk about it. You know, don't talk about our problems. It's not a good thing. Shame on you for writing about an issue that we would prefer that we didn't talk about. That was the big problem then. So it got like, I don't know, 800 or 900 letters. And again, it was all these Americans, non-Arabs, who said, why did Newsweek publish a column from an Arab terrorist like Ray Hanania? And I figured, okay. So I ended up writing a book in 1996 called I'm Glad I Look Like a Terrorist, Growing Up Arab in America, because if I'm a terrorist, then terrorists can't be bad. That was my argument. And the book did very, very well. 248-557-3300 is our number. I'd love for you to call in and join us and talk to us about democracy. Why don't more Arabs vote in Detroit? Why don't we understand that democracy is not about 100% agreement? It's about consensus. You know, the majority rules, but the majority has to be benevolent, and it has to work with the minority. And I don't mean racial majority and racial minority. I'm talking about minority vote groups and majority vote groups based on issues. And it doesn't seem like Egypt is, the Egyptian people who want democracy are willing to accept the reality of democracy. I apologize for that cold I got this morning. It's pretty tough, but I'm going to be okay. I figure if you're going to get a cold, you might as well get it on the end, the day of the end of the world, December 21st, 2012. Another disappointing day in our world where we've been promised that something was going to happen and nothing's been delivered again. Really let down. We're going to take one more break here at Radio Ballady. It's 32 minutes after the hour here at WNZK AM 690. Our website is radioballady.com. You can give us a buzz at 248-557-3300. Let us know how you feel about democracy. How come, I mean, these are the questions we're that I'm talking about this morning. How come Detroit doesn't have an Arab columnist writing every morning? If I were living in Detroit, that would be the one thing that would be upsetting to me. Dearborn, Livonia, whatever. And I picked up the paper in the morning, and I didn't see an Arab telling me what they think of what's happening in Detroit. And I don't just mean the Middle East. I'm talking about local politics, you know, in Detroit, in Livonia, in Dearborn, in all those areas. I would be very disappointed, and I would be really unhappy. And I probably do what I'm doing here in Chicago, because that's how I feel every morning when I get up in Chicago. There isn't one newspaper that has an Arab writing a column in Chicago. And we have 450,000 Arabs in the Chicagoland area. What is the problem, people? Wake up. You're still, like, lost in, you know, the 1001 nights, or, you know, you're really dreaming about Aladdin? Come on. Get into it. Get into reality, people. We need to do something. If the world's going to, the world's not going to end today. So we still have all these problems that we got to deal with. And you need to deal with them. You can't just say, the world's going to end. Who cares? Okay, it's over. The world's not going to end. So now we have all these problems. Let's do something about them. Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690, Radio Ballady, RadioBallady.com, 248-557-3300. I'm Ray Hanania. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue yapping and talking about these important issues here at Radio Ballady. We'll be right back, right after these messages.
Whether it's makluba, warak dawali, tabbouleh, hummus, mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
Jake's Candy, 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sally at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania here at 248-557-3300, talking about democracy and looking at some of the issues, including democracy in Egypt. Why hasn't it taken hold? I mean, the protests... It's okay to protest, but there's a limit to protesting. They elected a president. Not everybody liked him. Obviously, that's what the election results showed. 51-52% of the Egyptian people voted for Mohamed Morsi. He's the president. I didn't like George Bush. He was elected twice. I didn't go to the streets and try to tear the country down. And that's what some people think the Egyptian protesters are doing. Now, I don't know what they're doing, because I'm not there and the Egyptian media isn't very good at reporting. And social media isn't very accurate. You can't rely on tweeting and bloggers who don't understand how to write and have no training in journalism to be objective. It becomes all opinion. I mean, yeah, you're listening to my opinion now. I don't pretend to be, giving you a balanced, objective report on what's happening. I'm giving you my opinion. But you still need factual reporting. And we don't have a lot of it in Egypt or the Arab world. So we don't even know what the facts are that we're expressing our opinions about. It's almost a flawed system that we're forced to deal with, in the Middle East. And it needs to change. It's one of the big problems. But it just seems to me that, it's hot-headed Arabs. We're hot-headed. We get emotional. We get angry really easy. I've seen it all my life. And I dare anybody to call me up and say that Arabs aren't hot-headed. Because they are. We get very emotional and we get angry. We get intolerant. We don't accept things. If things don't go our way, what's that expression that fits us to a T? We'd cut off our nose to spite our face. We would rather destroy everything than take half. Isn't that what happened in Palestine? If we had taken half in 1947, we'd have everything today. But the Palestinians said, wait, I'm not taking half. I want everything. Because that's our nature. We don't accept compromise. We don't accept a portion. We have to have it all. It's all or nothing. And if you think about that, if you don't get all, you know what you're going to get, right? Nothing. All or nothing means if you don't get all, you're going to get nothing. And basically that's what we've gotten in Palestine, nothing. We don't have anything but suffering. And I wonder sometimes that, you know, it's a cultural thing. If we had accepted the partition of Palestine and recognized the reality of what was happening, today we would have one state called Palestine. There would be no Israel. It wouldn't exist. But instead, we fought weakly without any real strength or strategy. And all we did was help build Israel up into the most powerful military force in the Middle East. And in a way, they can thank us. Because had we not fought them, they'd still be weak. And we didn't beat them in 1948. They beat us. They not only took the partitioned Jewish state, but they took half of the partitioned Arab state, and they took all of Jerusalem. And that's a tragedy. And they're very uncompromising, and they're not very nice people sometimes, although there are many good Jewish people, obviously. But Zionism is a political movement and not a religion, but it's a political movement that's wrapped itself around a religion. So it's very hard to distinguish between Israeli Zionists and Jewish people. But Jewish people, for the most part, are very good people. They're very fair. They stand up for what's right. But somehow they have a blind spot for doing the right thing when it comes to Israel and the Palestinians. And it's hard to rationalize and reason with them. They get very angry. And in part because we get angry, you know, as Arabs. We don't talk to them with reason. We don't talk to them with, compromise and say, hey, the goal is to have everybody live freely. Instead of doing that, we get really angry. We get very emotional. We start screaming. We get upset. We start making threats. And pretty soon, instead of nurturing or promoting peace, we're ripping it to pieces. We get democracy in Egypt, and instead of building democracy in Egypt, we're ripping it to pieces. And the other side is just uncompromising. Now, I'm not saying that Morsi isn't trying to strengthen his powers. Of course he is. Every politician tries to do that. But there is a system in place in Egypt where the Egyptian people can change things through democracy. Yes, they can. And they can ensure that Morsi does the right thing. But that doesn't involve violent protests, especially from the losers like Baradei and the guy from the Arab League. I can't remember his name, and I don't even want to. I know his name, but I don't want to remember it because he's such a loser. He was the head of the Arab League, and he did nothing. The Palestinians can thank the Arab League and their worthlessness for all our failure. You know, we blame Israel, but we should blame ourselves. 248-557-3300. Let's welcome Jamal here on Radio Ballady. On the last day of the world, December 21st, 2012, another disappointing promise that's not being kept. Hi, Jamal.
Good morning, Jack. How are you, Ray? I am in full agreement with you regarding this Arab League and that guy named Musa, whatever his name.
Right, Amr Musa. What a loser. You know, he was in Detroit a couple years back, and I remember, you know, how we all danced and celebrated and applauded him. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting in the audience, and I'm going, what the hell did this guy ever do for us other than get a big salary to be the leader of an organization that is totally worthless, the Arab League? It was pathetic, but we don't want to admit failure, do we?
Well, this is the problem, you know, with people like Omar Musa and others, they see that there is no end for that tunnel. So they turn around and try to do the best they can and benefit themselves, which is normal. But go back to our country here. So what's going on with gun control and trying to correct a problem with not sure a cause? What's your take on it? Because when you are in the quality business, you want to find out what's wrong with the car. So you do failure mode effect analysis on design, failure mode analysis on production, failure mode analysis on usage. Then you come up with a good solution for a problem with the car we drive. And there is life involved in every moment we drive a car. Four wheels are turning, and here you are. So what's your take on this gun? I mean, is gun control, can it be a solution in your opinion, Ray?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because it's not gun banning, but we need better controls. For example, there's no reason why anybody should have more than one gun in their house. And there's no reason why anybody should have an automatic weapon that fires multiple bullets, you know, with the click of the trigger, or makes it easy to fire 10 bullets in 2 seconds. There's no, that kid that, you know, killed all those 20 children in Newtown, he took the guns from his mother. And if he didn't have those guns, he never would have killed anybody that day. But they were right in front of him because his mother, who, you wonder, why does a mother have an automatic rifle, you know, like that automatic weapon that she had, that assault weapon that fired 50 bullets at one time? What's the point of having a gun like that? That's not for hunting, is it? Does anybody need an automatic weapon to go hunting? I don't know. I mean, I understand the right to hold a gun, but that the Second Amendment was adopted at a time when we were still, you know, like having problems in this country. You know, do we really need to put guns in the hands of everyday people? Would you really shoot somebody that walked into your house that tried to rob you? Or would you just say, hey, take what you want, get out of my house?
Well, here's the argument. I do agree with you, like every citizen in this country, that availability of guns or accessibility, rapid accessibility, it's a problem. But there's hundreds of millions of guns out there right now. So if you want to achieve what you are trying to achieve, then you have to take the guns from the hands of the people.
Yes.
That's achievable?
I don't know. That's tough. But I'll tell you, how about this? Maybe this is a solution. How about you get convicted of using a gun in any act of crime, and you get an automatic 20-year jail sentence? How about that? How about everybody that uses a gun, who's convicted of using a gun, we throw you in a room for 20 years, and you sit there with your underwear and slop food?
Ray, let's be realistic here. I know we all angry. You know, for the sake of the argument and trying to help everybody who's listening to us and us ourselves,
right,
debate and trying to see, because this is going to come out and maybe we're going to have to vote. Well, here's the key. You take Saudi Arabia, where there are a very tight control on crime. There is head rolling and there is hand cut, you know, cutting. And you see that the rate of crimes over there in perspective to the number of the people is not that high. But you're talking about 10 million or 8 million or maybe 6 million Saudi, and the rest are foreigners, that they are working there, so they don't follow the law. You are talking about a vast country like United States of America, God bless America, 310 million people, fast. No control. You drive from state to state. Nobody stops you. Nobody asks you for your driver license unless there is something there. It's twice the size of Europe. What you are here facing is democracy, democratic process, liberty, freedom, but at the same time, you're trying to control the people, you know, by not allowing the people to defend themselves.
Aren't people defending themselves when... Listen, how many instances are there of a person who has a gun who actually uses it to defend themselves? Very few.
I don't know. I mean, I don't have statistics.
I'm telling you, it's very few. And not because the crooks know that they have guns. It's because the truth is, Jamal, if someone points a gun in your face, the good people try to avoid conflict. Crazy people are the ones that kill. So you take a good person and you give them a gun, they're not going to use the gun to defend themselves, even though that's why they think they have the gun. What happens is the gun gets stolen, and it gets out on the street, and then it becomes used by a crazy person, because these people are all mentally ill that believe that it's okay, you know, to steal and kill people. I mean, I admit it's not an easy, you know, problem to address. There is no easy solution.
And I give you the argument, well, look, a lot of people don't want to own guns because they don't want to be traced. If you own a gun and you register a gun and you got stopped in a car, they know you have a gun and they assume it's in the car. And if you have a kid with you, it will be a fiasco because they will be pointing gun on you wherever that you have a gun. You know, here's the argument for people who are here and who wanted to own guns, you know, as what we call, I mean, look, I understand the argument that in the past, during George Washington against the Britons,
right,
there was mouth cuts.
We needed guns.
Huh?
We needed guns back then.
Yeah, but I mean, there was a mouth cut, and you need a gun because that's what the army had. That's
right.
What police had at that time. Now, what the army has and what the police have, the people have. So
right.
The argument here, you know, for others is that why you want to disarm us here? Are you planning on doing something?
No, they're not planning on doing anything. Listen, that kid, Adam Lanza, never would have had guns that morning if his mother hadn't bought those weapons and had him laying around the house with all those bullets. Jamal, listen, thank you for calling, man. I appreciate it. I was dying here. It was almost the end of the world for me, you know, because of this cold. So I appreciate you helping to chat through this.
Same as when I talk to you, but again, I want you to understand something, Ray.
Yeah.
That kid, which he or he not, we don't know for sure, facing situations, treatable or not treatable, whether he has access to his mother's guns or not, if he is premeditated, is planning on doing something, the only way you stop him is by shooting him when you face him and the action shooting other people. Because, look, evil is on earth, and the only way evil can act is by occupying other human beings.
Yep.
And when evil occupying a human being, it becomes physical. Now you have to stop that evil in the human being. And the only way sometimes when there's violence is for that evil to be killed with the human being.
All right, listen.
It's a problem that we all don't understand.
All right, Jamal, listen, thank you for the call and your opinions. I always appreciate them. You know that. Thanks, man. Let's go to Fayez on line 248-557-3300. Hey, Fayez, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for the nice show.
Thank you. I was dying here, and it wasn't really the end of the world. Aren't you disappointed that they keep telling us there's going to be an end of the world and it never happens?
We just have to be optimistic.
Yeah. go ahead, Fayez.
Okay, I just wanna say, like, when Israel come and bomb our countries with their airplanes,
right,
don't differentiate between Christian, Muslim, Shiite.
You're right. They don't distinguish between them at all.
So, and and the Israel, they like us to be divided. They're watching us, like,
right,
attacking each other. And they get benefit of that.
Right.
My point is just give the Arab strength a chance.
Here's the point that I was trying to make earlier, Faiz, is I agree with you. There's a difference between attacking to destroy ourselves as Arabs, attacking other Arabs, but criticizing other Arabs. You know, if you're sick, you need to admit that you're sick if you're going to get better. If there's a problem, we can't, and we pretend the problem doesn't exist, then the problem just gets worse. We have a problem, I think, with voting. Arabs are afraid to admit the truth that our community doesn't vote. We tell ourselves we vote, but the truth is, look at the results. We don't do a very good job of voting. We don't build coalitions. Why aren't there more Arabs in office? You know, like in Detroit and some of those areas. There's some. In fact, I think Rashida Tlaib is her name. She's not elected from an Arab area. She's elected from an African-American area. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, as you said, we just need to be active wherever we live, whether in America or in our countries back there, to elect the right person, no matter what his background is.
Right.
And we should just like give them a chance. Give those elected leaders a chance to move.
Yeah, that's my position about Egypt, because I don't agree with everything that Morsi does, but I think we should give him a chance to be a president. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to do things I don't agree with. But he's only going to be there 4 years, I think, right, as the president of Egypt. And then we elect a new president. And if we don't like him, elect somebody else.
Not just because he's like Islamic background, we're just going to go ahead and attack him.
Well, they're just doing that because
something wrong.
Right. That is terrible to attack him because of that.
You know, instead of just like because he's not like a Christ, like because of his background. And the same thing, like in Syria, where I come from, like we shouldn't like keep supporting that dictator over there just because he's like, you know, he helped us one day.
Right.
I mean,
they're saying that if we tear down.
Stick to the people, I mean, instead of keep supporting that dictator.
Yeah, I think that I hate to see Syria torn to pieces, but I don't believe that Assad should be in power. And I think he is a dictator. And I think the only way to take a dictator out is through revolution and resistance and fighting. Now, I'm hoping that when he's gone, we have a chance to build a better country. The worst case scenario is it's going to be as bad as it was, and there'll be another dictator there. But I think it's worth the chance to change things, you know, in Syria. Faiz, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your opinion.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And now we're down to the last couple minutes on this final day of the human race, December 21st, 2012. I'll lay any money, $1,000, that it's not the end of the world today, okay? It's not the end of the world. Another promise that was not kept by these survivalists, these people who portend and predict the future and predict the end of the world, it's not happening. And I'm kind of glad, because that means I'll be here next Friday at 8 o'clock Detroit time on radio talking about Middle East issues with you listening. And I do appreciate all of you who listen. I wish more of you would call in. I'm not going to bite your head off, even though I have really strong opinions. But I do appreciate how many emails I get from people telling me how much they like the show. So thank you so much. Remember, go to RadioBallady.com. to get information on our show. Sign up for Twitter and read my columns at Hanania.com. I'm Ray Hanania. I'll see you next Friday, in spite of the Mayan calendar failure. Talk to you later. Everybody have a great week. Bye-bye.